have your main user as a different user account, the username not tied into your name or anything like that. Because with Windows, when you log in, you're only going to have to type in the username once.
Sure.
And every time you log back in, if you're just using the same old user, then it will remember the username. So use something weird. Why not?
Yeah, and if anything is trying to install,
it will
request admin privileges, so you'll know that something's trying to do it. Even though Windows is so unsecure that whatever is out there trying to do it, it will bypass even that, and it will authorize itself by itself. So
this is a bit of a double-edged sword, because if you use this at home, that's a fantastic idea of locking down your system.
Yeah.
Remember your admin password, and then use the function which is shift and right click, and you get an extra little option in your bar there. Yeah, run as, and then give it your admin password if you're trying to install stuff. That's a great thing for the home use kind of thing. When I was doing my MSDN training in Windows 2000.
Mm-hmm.
They taught us the theory of how it is meant to work with Active Directory.
Yeah.
So you've got your admin users, and then you've got your power users, and then you've got your normal users, and then you've got kind of your guest.
Sure.
So, you know, they told us, well, put people on just user if they're just running applications and things like that, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so we run with that for a little bit. Start running into applications that won't run just on the user level of access privileges.
Yeah.
So we go, okay.
You can apply an actual group policy to them. But AD.
Yeah.
Is actually really, really good.
It is fantastic if you're using the full domain.
If you use it correctly.
Yeah.
And you set
very powerful.
And you set up your group policies, and you set up your user groups correctly and apply the specific group policies to each user group, and don't use the default ones, you're flying. You really are.
Active Directory rocks.
Yeah, it does. You know, but again, don't apply, like, let's say you wanted to apply a user to a secure share or something. Don't apply the user. Always apply the group and put the users in that group. It's much easier. It makes your life much easier to manage as well. You know, it just takes away all that frustration and work and trying to locate who has access to what. Also, remember that each share that you create, by default, everyone has full access to it. I think people just completely people just forget that and just, like, you know, create a share that everyone has access to and then go, oh fuck, why have all these files been deleted?
It's because you've not removed the permissions from people and so on and so forth.
Yes.
I think using the group policy objects is something they call in the books ADGLP? AGLDP?
LDAP.
AGLDAP, yeah. It's, So basically, like say, you put everyone in a group and then you apply specific permissions to that group and you pull people in and out of the group depending on what you want them to do, which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
But we were messing around with that a lot for many years, and it doesn't really run like it should in the books.
Hmm.
The group policy kind of works fine on network access, but on the actual workstations themselves, that user needs to have certain credentials on the actual box
in order
to do things.
If that's the case, then all you have to do is go into manage the computer and go into the local administrator group and add the network username into that local administrator group so that they have only domain local administrator privileges, and that allows them to do pretty much what they need to do.
but then they've got full admin privileges on their local box.
Not necessarily, unless you specify in group policy that they are still not allowed to install, but are allowed to assume admin rights on the machine. So even then, if they want to install something, you need the administrator password of the domain.
Well, it's not even the installing things that we were worried about. Yeah. Because that's all been locked down. It's the actual running of the programs.
Right, okay.
We've been using so many different programs from different vendors all over the globe that not all of them are written that very well.
Mm.
So some of them, just to run, needed local admin privileges.
Mm.
Privileges we didn't want to give people.
Sure.
Because you bump them up to that level, they get all kinds of shit for free.
Okay.
And, you know, you're just trying to run a fucking simple goddamn package. It's can't run random error message. Okay, let's see what happens when we put you in the admin group. Mm. Yeah, I'll run, fine. Hey! Mm. Oh, fuck. This wasn't what they taught me on the course. Basically going back a few minutes.
Which people won't be able to hear because my fucking thing ran out of battery.
We did wink out there for a bit.
Sadly.
And remember I said wink, not wank. Using a restricted access account on your home machine and then admin when you need it. Very cool idea, and one that is really enforced in Linux as well, where you've got your root and you've got your user, and you use the root when you need to.
Yeah.
You don't log in as root and do all your shit.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah, it's a good theory that you can carry over to Windows.
Exactly.
I've seen in a networking kind of world, sometimes you might have to sacrifice it a bit and kind of bodge it, but fuck it. That's what you got to do.
Yeah. And what else did I want? Yeah. Okay. As a hacker, you may have personal information which you necessarily don't want other people to share or have access to, willing or not willing. The best solution to this is never to store any personal information unencrypted on a local drive. Secondly, is to encrypt all data and carry it on your person via a USB flash drive. If it comes to a situation where you need to destroy this data, it's far more easier to destroy it from a flash drive than to wipe a disk, because a disk can always be retrieved. You can physically disassemble a USB flash drive and destroy all the data on it much easier and make it unretrievable than you can from a hard disk.
And if they keep getting smaller, the USB drives, you could probably fucking swallow it.
Yeah. No. Bad idea. They'll just wait a few hours for you to shit it out.
But that's true. The police can keep you for like 3 months now. Yeah. I forgot about that.
But what you want to do is basically smash it into very small little bits. Now, the ones I have are actually small enough so that you can snap them in half and physically destroy them. Basically, put them down a drain, smash them up, put them under a car wheel, throw them against a building, throw a heavy object on top of them. They will no longer contain data. Safe to assure.
Yeah, it's also a cool idea, mate.
USB flash drives only last for 10 years. They have a 10-year lifetime. After that, they can no longer hold data on them. So, if you do, I recommend carrying one on your person at all times and only storing encrypted personal information on there. Now, this can be very sensitive data that you may wish to have. This is what I do in practice.
Mm.
So, yeah.
I didn't know they could only store it for 10 years, though. I suppose it's not really a worry 10 years from now. Mm. You know, you're getting some pretty cool bloody USB flash system out there now. 10 years from when you buy one, there's going to be a much cooler option.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually speaking to Sapphire today about that, and I said, you know, in 10 years' time, we're going to have fucking microchips inserted into our brain, like, carrying everything on, like, fucking lithium fucking crystals or something stupid like that.
I think the whole human-computer integration thing is going to be a big push within the next 25 years.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean,
we are the Borg.
Yeah. In that case, if you are going to do anything, only boot from CD so that nothing's stored on the hard disk, and save everything onto USB. That way, it's untraceable.
Cool.
Obviously, you know, they'll try very hard. Whoops, sorry about that. I'm just saying, in practice, in theory, only. I've never had to do it myself, no.
Theoretically speaking, of course, yes.
Exactly.
No, that's cool, because basically what you're doing there is you're segmenting your computer into different parts. You've got, let's say, your laptop, which is going to run it all. You've got your CD, which has got your operating system on. Yeah. And you've got your USB drive for any other read-write kind of information that you need. And very easily you can separate those three components if need be. So it's a very cool kind of area.
Yeah, definitely. That's the best form of practice, and always encrypt everything. That's personal. Take that into practice. You know, encrypt stupid things like your coursework, your files, or something that you know. It's just something stupid. Get into that routine of assigning keys to stuff and using strong keys to save all your stuff, because now the way computing power goes, it doesn't take a long time to do that.
Yep. There are a lot of cool options out there with encryption, so make use of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of cool options for a long time, since PGP.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that goes back a bit now. God, I remember doing PGP when I was mid-90s. Because when I first got on the internet, I was talking to all the fellow UFO nuts.
Yeah.
Because I was major big time into the whole UFO conspiracy then. And I've kind of pulled back from it now. But it's like, wow, the internet, it's cool. It's full of nutters, just like me. We used to just encrypt our emails to each other and stuff like that. And it was only stuff like, hey, dude, how's it going? Yeah, not so bad, mate. You know, I did this. Oh, have you seen this picture of an alleged UFO in the sky? And it's like a blob. You know, over LA. It's like, wow, that's got to be a UFO, yeah. Better encrypt this because, you know, the men in black will be listening and stuff like that. But there's a lot of cool encryption options out there.
Sure.
I think, is Blowfish still going?
Yeah.
Because I was looking into that probably a few years back now, 2001, something like that.
Yeah.
And that was very, very strong encryption for free. Yeah. You know,
well, it's open source, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I downloaded it onto my Mandrake, so I was playing about it. Another actual thing that I wanted to announce was a little project I thought about last night, and I talked over with Ionix and our good friend Scobie, and this might, if you choose to, it might involve you.
Uh-oh.
It is to set up our own private network.
Yeah.
Basically, to have a private link between me, Ionix, you, and Scobie. And all those are linked in together, like a frame, so that there's no... You know, if you go down, or if I go down, or if any part of us go down, we can then route the traffic over... a different way.
Right.
And the information that we can share between us, it's going to be a trusted network, of course, because we'll be able to access each other's shares within that private network. So you see, it will be in effect as if we're on a local area network over the internet.
Right.
All sharing Linux, all running Linux on there. So what I... pardon me. What I plan to do over the next few... probably next month, after the show, after the conference, is to set up a Linux server with hardware that I've obtained, which will run a file server for everyone, a web server, public web server, and our own private network. So that basically, let's say you're in the shits and you need to contact one of us, you'll know that you can jump on the network and freely discuss anything between us. We might even bounce around a simple kind of IRC framework around that as well. Different things, you know, from as long as we've got the link running and we can talk to each other, then we're sorted. Basically, we can throw anything across there. Then on from that kind of base point.
To me, it sounds like a very intriguing idea.
Yeah.
So yeah, fuck it, count me in.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there scratching my head as how exactly it would work. So yeah. It's something I don't know about, sure. And therefore something I want to know about, you know.
Well, I'm sure you know.
So, yeah.
I assume you know how VPNs work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same principle. Basically, what we'll have is a VPN between each point.
Right.
Which will... we will be given, like, a local area network IP address, so that each... machine acts as if, you know, it will be a tunnel, point-to-point tunnel network.
So is each user just VPN into the Linux server?
Each user...
Or we VPN into each...
Each server, VPNs into each other server. So, if you want to reach me, it will find the quickest route to there, to my machine. And if you want to, let's say your way was through SCOBY down to me, and if SCOBY went down, then you'd either go straight to me or through Ionix down to me, and everything goes for everything else. So basically, I can access your shares, you can access mine, you can upload to me on the LAN, and I can upload to you on the encrypted network. But also, we can link that externally so that people can talk to us, and basically that server will bridge whatever is happening over to the LAN network, so that the share can be picked up on one of us, if you see what I mean. So we'll have our own private network.
Cool.
Yeah.
I know to do the VPN in when you're all in to kind of the one main. Server, but the routing and things like that via the workstations and stuff, that's pretty cool, man. I don't know anything about that, so yeah, count me in.
Yeah, cool.
You know, if nothing else, then just for something cool that I don't know about.
Well, it's going to be. I did this kind of stuff on a huge scale, basically on a major kind of work related thing.
Yeah,
On a Windows network. So this is going to be completely new to me on a Linux network.
Mm.
Although the same principle goes for that is, you know, one machine can see two machines and they only know about them. Mm. And those machines know somebody else. So it all kind of works together. So, you know, we'll have our own DNS, we'll have our own, all that kind of crap, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's all going to be fault tolerant, so you know, it's going to be bridging together. I don't see it as taking too long, you know. So I can do it with a basic Debian install.
Bloody hell, that's pretty cool, man.
And I'm going to learn something fucking new for, you know, doing this. So I'm sure you will, and you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the basic setup would be an open port to a server that you wish to have running Linux on it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I'm starting to.
Yeah, so basically, what I will do for myself is I will segregate my network again, have a front layer, have one port open, everything is open to that machine. Then that machine will talk, will have one IP address signed to that virtual private network, and the rest will be assigned to whatever else I choose on the public network.
Yeah.
So will you, so will SCOBY, so will Ionix. So, you know, if you want to be part of this, you'll need a Linux machine. Doesn't have to be particularly, you know, fucking hardcore. I'm going to be running like a 1 gigahertz. Probably about 512 of RAM, and I'm looking at max of 20 gigs of hard disk space that I can contribute to this.
I think I'm beginning to picture it in my head, yeah.
Yeah. So what's going to be happen is that will be donated to the thing. So, you know, you're free to upload anything to mine, I'm free to upload anything to yours, and vice versa. Mm. And that goes to... That also will allow other people to be able to gain access to certain files, information, textbooks, PDFs, on the shared network.
So it's like bridging four or five different networks together.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Pretty much how the IRC system works. There's right. all these IRC servers at the top, which all are relayed together, so that if you jump on one node, you get all the information from the rest of the nodes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Let's go with it.
Yeah. Do you think you'd be okay with, like, setting up a Linux server?
Fuck yeah.
I mean, you'd be able to obtain that hardware and everything.
Not a problem. I got hardware coming up my ass.
That's good, man.
We're doing some major upgrades at work on the workstations. So the hardware that's a couple of years old that can't run the latest shit that we need will be more than enough to run a basic Linux box and just get some networking going. So, yeah, not a problem.
Cool. Well, as I said, you know, it's going to be a trusted network. So if somebody is interested in joining the network, you know, there's going to be initial kind of phases of where you have to go through and how long we've known you for and all that kind of stuff. But we, as always, are always open to that.
Cool.
Which is going to be pretty cool, because I bought Debian, and it should be arriving tomorrow sometime. So I'll be using Debian as my operating system. That.
What did that set you back?
It set me back £25. I know, it's ridiculous. The worst thing was the license cost. Because I got this license, it was like, you know, £2,000 for two machines. And then, oh man.
And so you can't just download Debian then?
Oh yeah, I'm just joking. I, of course, I'm joking. I didn't buy any licenses for it, although I did purchase Debian. With the option, of course, of downloading it, I could have done that if I wished to.
Yeah.
But I actually wanted to have the DVDs of Debian with the manual, with everything, you know, as an actual purchased Linux operating system.
I've done the same thing myself. I mean, you can get it for free.
Yeah.
But when I was first starting out in Linux, I'd had a couple of bad experiences with it before. So I went out, I got the off-the-shelf Linux, which was like £30. Mm. I thought, well, fuck it, that's spare change in my pocket. I'll have it, because it comes with two bloody big manuals that would tell me what the bloody hell I'm meant to do.
Yeah.
And in the right order. Yeah, the information's all out there on the net, and if you're smart enough and if you're patient enough, you can get it all for free.
Definitely.
You know, you can download the operating system, you can look up the tutorials and the FAQs about how to get into it, how to install it, and what you're doing wrong, which you will hit a lot if you've never used Linux before.
Sure.
But it's kind of a very old basic human trait to want the manual there with you and look it up in the back of the book and go, right, okay, error 711111.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Let's look it up, page 23, you are a noob.
Yeah.
Ah, it's right. So, yeah, the first time going out on Linux, I would recommend getting it off the shelf for a couple of quid.
It's not particularly expensive.
Nope.
There's no licensing clause to it.
You're basically paying for the cost of printing the books and half a dozen CDs or a DVD, you know, that kind of thing. So,
you know, so what I will do? Actually, I forgot to mention, I was playing around with Slacks. I was playing around with the Kill Bill version of Slacks and the Popcorn version of Slacks. The Kill Bill version of Slacks is a really slimmed down installation of Slackware that is kind of natural to Windows, so you can run EXEs on it. The Popcorn version is just so sexy because it runs off a 512 USB flash drive.
Nice.
So you can literally mount it onto a flash drive.
Yeah.
Push it into your computer and boot off that.
Boot off the USB. That is sweet.
And it runs really, really well. It is really nice. And it looks beautiful. It does actually... The Kill Bill version just... It is quite sexy. Although, I don't think I'll be using it as a base install at all. I think I'll just, you know, fuck about with it and see how far I can push it and then just forget about it for a while. If you are interested in downloading it, it's Google Slacks and you'll find it.
How do you spell Slacks?
S-L-A-X.
S-L-A-X, cool.
Also, I was researching how to make live CDs, and I think that's on live-linux.org, where you can actually download the script that will make your own distribution a live CD distribution, so you can run it off a CD. So you can pretty much either recompile your kernel, customize it, and then run this script that will make it a live CD, and then, you know, burn the ISO onto your CD and run your own personalized operating system, which is, I think, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got to be the way to go.
Yeah.
Personally, I think flash memory is the way to go, just because of space limitations on CDs.
Yeah.
And because a flash memory stick is the size of a piece of chewing gum.
Yeah.
You know, you stick that on your keyring, you're walking around with your own operating system.
Exactly.
Basically, you hit a problem, you've got a machine there that's available, whack it in the USB port, there's your operating system.
And the beautiful thing cool about is that it auto detects hardware. It also is an actual hard drive, so you can read and write to its own partition. And why not stick it in your car? Run an operating system inside your car. You know, you've got about a gig of memory. Load up necessary files. You know, have another USB drive that links to your MP3 player. Mm-hmm. Play movies, MP3s in your car on a Linux operating system with the power of a web browser, with the power of Wi-Fi, with the power of everything, you know, you could imagine.
Whatever the hell you want.
Exactly, yeah. In a car. You know, I think this is my probably another work in progress project that I might do, is see how much it would cost me to run an operating system in a car with a nice little LCD screen.
Not bloody much is the answer.
Exactly.
I was piddling about a few months ago with... running my tiny little laptop out of the car. So I did all the cabling and just basically a bit of tape here and there around the floor and whatnot. Picked up a gizmo from Maplin's, which converts your standard 3-pin plug chunk into your cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
Clunk at the other end. That was like £30. And that was the best they had. That was their top of the line model.
Yeah.
Because they had ones at £10, they had them at 15, 20, and all kinds of things like that. But I thought, well, I'm not sure, I don't know, and maybe one day I'll want to run a kettle off it or a TV. You know, sod it, I'll have the top of the line. £30, fine. So I actually got all that set up pretty well, and then actually accidentally slipped, put the wireless card into the. Laptop and then the aerial into the wireless card, and you know, slipped again, pressed a NetStumbler. I'm very clumsy, and drove around for an hour. that all that worked fine. Basic USB, was it LCD touchscreen, running off an operating system. I don't think that's going to be a challenge at all,
no,
to be honest with you.
I mean, all you need is a very slimmed down. Motherboard, USB ports. Don't even need a hard disk. You can have a hard disk if you want.
Well, you got those the micro ATX boards, they'll run from. They will boot from PC MCIA cards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can get adapters from PC MCIA to laptop notebooks, the 2.5 ones. So you could have a teeny tiny little hard disk in there if you needed it.
Mm.
And that's if you needed it.
Sure.
Like, say, with all this USB stuff going on and the capacity of those going through the roof, you probably won't need it.
Yeah. You don't need particularly much speed on there as well. You know, the standard P3 would work with it. You're looking at a decent amount of RAM, let's say 512. That's pretty much all you need. In fact, you only need 32 megs of RAM to run the operating system. So yeah, it's quite an interesting little project there, you know. Cause,
I say fucking run with it, mate. It's a cool idea, and I'd love to see it.
Yeah. The only problem is, you've probably guessed it already.
You've not got a car.
Yeah.
That's going to be really the expensive purchase side of this whole project.
Yeah. I'm going to have to buy a car.
You should do it like one of those MasterCard commercials.
Yeah.
Price of motherboard, £20.
Yeah.
RAM, £10. Hooking it all up. Fucking, it took me 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Car, £10,000.
Yeah. Fucking ownage, priceless. Oh, God.
Pimping out my Corsa.
How about that, eh?
That is a cool idea, actually, the more and more I think about it.
Well, I could just say, I've done all this, and then give it to you. And then you can come down to London and drive me around. And we could do some, you know, war driving.
Windows rolled down, top back, turn up the bass. Oh, yeah.
Antenna, like, 6 foot antenna sticking out the back. With a satellite dish on a servo spinning around. With a Pringles can.
Just doing a 360. Beep, 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 beep.
With a duct tape Pringles can.
We're not going to look suspicious at all.
Oh, nah. I found one. Stop, stop, stop. I can't fucking stop here. There's no parking.
We're on the M1. I'm in the fast lane.
Yeah, fuck, man.
That's a cool idea.
Oh, yeah.
I can't really see it being that difficult, to be honest with you.
Hmm.
Because those guys on MTV's Pimp My Ride seem to do it every week.
Yeah, exactly.
So, oh, here's my shitty Volkswagen bus. Please exhibit. Would you pimp my ride because I own a piece of shit car? Yeah, cool. We're going to put a DVD player in. We're going to put a PlayStation in. We're going to put these massive speakers in. It's all going to be touchscreen from the dashboard.
Mm.
It's like, what? Why are you giving this fucking jackass a free car?
Yeah.
And those guys don't have a problem with it.
Actually, I was speaking to Droops about the same. He had the same project, was to install a mini PC into his 4x4. Pick up and run XP from it.
Mm.
Now his idea was to have a mini desktop computer in there with a touchscreen and all, you know, all the bells and whistles with it, but he ran into one problem.
What's that?
Was to have to fucking power the fucker.
Yeah.
Because he had to I don't know where he is at it right now, but what will happen is you'll need to rewire an extra battery into there, maybe even two, and run all that into a parallel circuit so that all the batteries are interconnected, so that you can actually start your fucking engine.
Yeah, you've got enough juice to run.
Yeah.
What the car normally runs, and then all this extra electronics on the side.
Yeah. So that's one of the issues there. But as you said, if you can run it off, basically the amount of juice that comes out of that cigarette charger is 12 volts DC. Now a computer needs 240 AC. So what you need to do is buy a DC to AC inverter, which will invert the voltage up to 230 AC, to be able to power up your machine. Now, these inverters, I don't know how much they cost, but they're not too dear, you know.
If it's the same jobby I got, then it's less than a night in the piss.
Yeah.
You know. So stay in next Saturday and then head down to Tandy's.
Exactly.
So, you know, Tandy's still going?
Don't think so.
I know it's just Radio Shack with a different name, but I haven't seen a Tandy's over in years.
So maybe this is a project we can kind of work on, I don't know.
Yeah, fuck it, let's do it.
Exactly.
Count me in, buddy.
Yeah, we can kind of, you know, talk about some schematics.
Yeah, mull over some ideas on the forums and, you know, what touchscreen will be best and specs and shit like that. Exactly. And I say go with it.
Yeah, why not, man? You know, this is all about hacking, and it's just one kind of simple idea that turns into something really interesting and really fun to work with, like, you know, creating our own network. Scobie's idea to create our own hosted dedicated IRC server, which I thought was a fucking fabulous thing that he was doing. I thought it was really amazing, and I'd love to have a go at that because it's something I like to do. And now this, you know, fucking creating your own little, you know, small operating system, Linux operating system in your car.
It's only got to be basic. I mean, we're not going to be playing fucking Battlefield 2 on it or anything like that. But you're right, this is what hacking is. It's I can't buy anything like this off the shelf down Halfords or down PC World. I mean, this is a really cool idea.
Even if you could, it will cost you so much. It will cost you a lot to do this.
Fucking too right.
Actually, Popcorn works really well. It is actually really powerful. You know, you've got Mozilla Firefox on there, you've got Media Player on there, you've got, you know, even if you don't have something on there, you can actually compile it into there so that you've got it. Let's say you needed Kismet in there and it's not got Kismet in there. You can compile Kismet on there, run Kismet, and it will run fine in a next server. I think it's KDE. Yeah, it's KDE that runs. So you've got a nice little GUI there. It looks fabulous. So, yeah.
Why not? Yep, fantastic, mate.
Yeah. Do you know how large it is? It's actually 125 megabytes, I think, the entire operating system.
Damn it, I was going to make a penis joke there, but you beat me to it. 125 meg for the operating system.
Yeah, I think it's actually 200 unpacked.
Mm.
But that will fit on your on the cheapest USB drive.
Yeah. And USB drives are so bloody cheap. I mean, I've seen the 256s for like £20, the 512s for not much more, I think 30, 35, and the 1 gigs, you're not going to break the bank on those either. I think the most I've seen them go for is pushing £50.
Yeah.
So I could be wrong, but that's what I remember them being.
Yeah.
So that is incredible. Just to have a 1 gig storage option that you can carry around on your keyring. Fucking, we are living in very cool times sometimes.
Yeah, it's true, man. It's just amazing how, when you kind of get into the deep end of it, how amazing technology is and the stuff you can do with it.
Yeah.
I was burning an operating system, burnt it straight off disk, put it into a computer and boot it into it. It's just so beautiful to be able to do that nowadays. And the amount of speed that I can download an entire operating system, you know, it's there within an hour and a half. You know, I've got this something fabulous new I can play with in an hour and a half, burn it onto a disc, and away I go. I actually downloaded both two operating systems today. It was Popcorn and Kill Bill.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, this is great.
And that's cool stuff. It used to be like a whole bloody week's project just to download it.
Yeah, definitely.
It wasn't that long ago either.
No, exactly.
The leaps and bounds it takes, technology. And if this whole 24 meg ADSL thing kicks off, that's going to be a whole new revolution.
It's going to be amazing for our network.
Yeah. I want to know what their bloody upload speeds are. They better not be 512.
Yeah, should be pretty good. I mean, my upload speed is a meg. Sorry. Mm. Yeah, a meg. You know, I think this is going to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, why the hell not?
good stuff.
Yeah.
So now we just need to find a couple of cheap touchscreens. And I was looking into this actually not so long ago. I think you can get teeny tiny ones for not too much.
Cool.
So I'll have to resume some of my old research and find a good one. Yeah, fuck it, this can be done very easily, I reckon. So,
well,
let's run with it.
What I need to do is get a server set up. That will be after the conference, because that's when I'll get the rest. I'll get a motherboard, some RAM, and a processor from SCOBY.
Cool.
And then I need a case and a power supply. Last time I did something like this, I didn't have a case, so I put everything into a wooden box.
Oof. Didn't set fun. didn't set on fire, did it?
Yeah, no, it was fine.
Have you seen those pictures on the internet? There's a guy who builds computer cases out of Lego.
He actually built. I saw
a few people
a whole computer case built out of fans.
Oh, yeah. I think that was from a New Zealand guy. Yeah.
That was fucking hilarious, man.
That was nuts.
Could you imagine
opened
the
up
noise level of that?
Oh. That would make your eyes bleed, surely. I think I've got two fans in my computer, and you can bloody well hear that like a jet engine at the minute. They're nothing special. Mm. If you have your entire computer case built out of fans.
Yeah.
At least your motherboard won't turn black.
No.
Glad to see. Update on last night's news, listeners. Yeah. SCOBY is back online.
Yeah, he is.
He's got some other computer stuff going on.
That was quite rapid as well.
Yeah.
But then, you know, drastic measures.
You can't keep that man down.
Yeah, because the thing is, he was actually selling quite a lot of stuff. So I said, right, mate, I'm going to snap some stuff up from you. So I snapped up a motherboard, CPU, and some RAM off him. And I already got two hard disks. The beauty about fucking Linux is that you don't need that much hard disk space to do what you need to do. It's so good. So I think 20 gig on two hard disks will be plentiful.
That should be cool, mate.
It's going to be good. Yeah. Hopefully not too many headaches.
Nah. I think this will be cool.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's a challenge, isn't it? It's something we don't know how to do off the top of our heads right now.
Yeah.
And something we will know how to do later on. Yeah. That's the whole bloody purpose of hacking. Is learning.
Yeah, exactly. Because even, you know, I'm hoping once we get this thing sorted and we've got it all running and we can all, you know, see each other on the same network sort of thing.
Yeah.
Go, oh shit, this is really cool. Right, where can we take this now, you know?
Now that we know how to do this, you know, what's the next stage?
Exactly,
yeah.
What's the next step? Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
What time are we on there, mate?
I don't know, because... Oh, telephone! Hello?
Hello?
Hello!
Who's this?
this is the American.
Oh.
Oh, alright, never mind, I'll go away.
Yeah, see you later, guy.
Sorry to disappoint.
Yeah. How's it going, buddy?
It's going all right. Yeah, I managed to shave off part of my thumb today, but aside from that, fairly good.
Cool.
Ouch.
Very tiny bit.
Oh,
just in a very large area.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, you got two of them, fuck it.
I know, right? I got a backup.
You got a redundancy there.
Yeah. Good old system, this body.
Hmm.
I've got a bit of crackpot news.
All right.
Apparently, there's a gentleman in southern Florida who has a space-age polymer company that has this idea. He's been working on a polymer that's a powder, and what he's been using it for is soaking up water in gas tanks and things along those lines.
Uh-huh.
Well, right now he's in the testing phases of using a polymer powder that would be dumped from an aircraft on a hurricane.
Yeah.
And
yes. Yeah.
Soak up the water to stop it.
That's correct.
It sounds insane to me.
Yeah, this is something I think I spoke about on a past episode. And me, Planet said, oh, is it Dalkin Powder? You remember
question
that?
Question that I have, what are they going to do with this big blob of water-soaked plastic?
Well, apparently it's actually dissolvable.
Is it water-soluble?
It breaks down.
Huh.
Yeah.
Into what?
It decomposes into whatever it's made out of.
Huh.
Yeah.
Still sounds insane.
I know, it's crazy. That's what I think Planet was saying. I don't know if you remember Planet. Hello? Planet?
Hello?
Yeah, you're right.
Still there. Yep, did break up. But
did you hear what we were speaking about?
No, sorry, mate.
Oh, okay. You're saying about this guy who came up with an idea of dropping this kind of like powder on a hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember
yeah.
when I said I was yep. talking about it in a past episode?
Yeah.
And you said it was talcum powder.
Yeah.
Just dump a whole load of talcum powder and it will soak it all up.
It might work. Yeah. I don't know.
What I want to know is the military industrial complex who are using this weather machine to create the hurricanes going to be upset that somebody else is now stopping them?
Yeah, exactly. We were discussing the idea we kind of came up with last night about creating our own network. And Planet actually likes it. So, you know.
I like it!
I did as well.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. So, what, I mean, yeah. You're probably, out of us three now, the most qualified person to kind of discuss it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that kind of scares me.
I mean, in a technical sense, I've done it in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a Windows kind of thing that we were going to do, fuck it, I can get it done in a day, and we'll have a proper VPN point-to-point, you know, sharing across the world kind of thing. But
you all will have.
Yeah. But seeing as that we're doing this in a Linux thing, how would we go about doing this? Let's assume each one of us has a Linux server running open on the ports that we need it open on to the public. What would we do?
Alrighty then. Let me just pull up a little bit of research.
Ooh, the guy's prepared.
Alright. We would use something called OpenVPN.
Ah.
It's an application to securely tunnel IP networks over single UDP port.
Okay.
It's a support for TLS-based session authentication and key exchange with packet encryption, packet authentication, and packet compression.
Sexy.
From what I've been looking at of it, it works very well, works very quickly and efficiently, and we would pretty much use that.
Cool. So it would be as if the whole network was on a LAN.
Yes.
We'd all be able to access each other's shared files and everything.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah. There's a couple other things that we could use as well. Mm-hmm. There's the secure VPN, which basically uses SSH type encryption along to do it. But OpenVPN looks like probably the most widely used Linux VPN network thing.
I guess we'll go with that then.
Seems like a smart choice.
Yeah. Why the fuck not?
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. We can get together on the actual specifics of it, but it's entirely doable. Mm. The software's already there. It's just setting up the framework for it.
Exactly.
Is there any news about poor Scobie's condition?
Yes, he's recovered from his tragedy, and he's actually online now.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
It's good to see he made a quick recovery on that one.
And I just thought, this, you know, the stuff we were talking about before, we can discuss this kind of offline with Planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I started off the show talking about... it was a major fucking rant about the incompetency of companies and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I cannot believe. I cannot believe it. I can't. No.
In the past 24 hours, the amount of fucking aggro we've seen is just amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unacceptable. Yeah. No excuse. I keep trying to come up with, like, little things in my mind to sort of rationalize it.
Yeah.
And it can't be done.
Yeah. I mean, you see, I contacted you first because I knew that I could trust you, and also because I needed to have a second guess, a second look at this. I couldn't fucking believe it myself when I saw this.
Yeah.
And then that fucking email arrived. And I thought, oh my God.
It just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just... Man, somebody severely needs to be fired.
Yeah, yeah.
It almost makes me wish that we still had, like, the stocks.
Mm.
So after they were fired, they could be let out to the town square and put in stocks so people could throw tomatoes and Ethernet cards at them.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's a punishment severe enough for this kind of incompetence. Mm. It's the most basic, basic... networking under Linux. It's the most basic things that you learn as far as system administration. There's absolutely no excuse for it.
Yeah.
I mean, the default install of Apache is more secure.
They're running what we witnessed.
I know. It's insane.
But, I mean, when Planet was saying, you know, he said it could be because of the way that, you know, people aren't keeping up to the way things are moving on the internet. But as I said, I didn't give out any details at all. But I'm just saying, for this case, there is no excuse.
I'm sorry, I missed that last bit.
I said I didn't give out any details. Planet was saying, you know, that it could be because they didn't keep up with the way things are moving in the internet world and everything like that. But for this case, there is absolutely no excuse for their sheer incompetence.
No, there really isn't. This is a thing that, like, hasn't been an issue on a default install for nearly 15 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, and if you go back further to, like, Unix-type systems, even this is just absolutely absurd.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're kind of well over an hour now.
Yeah, I figured as much. I was surprised to see you still on.
Sure. So what we'll do is... we can end the show right now, and then we can talk once I kill the stream and everything.
Okay.
Cool.
Sounds good. Do you want me to stay on the line or call
back? Yeah, if you want to stay on the line, I'll play some outro music, and then we'll kind of end the show.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. Well, it's a good night for me.
good night from Planet Live as well.
Yeah.
Good night. Good morning. Good night. Hello. Goodbye from... Ionic here.
Cool. Bye-bye.
And Bruce look good.
Yeah.
Rastafari.